Stephen Quayle, what has happened to those beings and those humans that might have been here a long time ago? I mean, do you subscribe to Michael Cremo's theory that we're talking about humans that were here millions of years ago?
Well, I probably wouldn't go so far as to say I agree with him that there were humans here millions of years ago, but I believe there was an angelic civilization. Again, understand, I'm not talking about guys with wings. I'm talking about entities created by God that are of a supernatural higher level than we are that have been on the earth for literally that long.
What do you think? You know, and I continue to keep looking at this DNM pyramid, David. I mean, if this thing was not made by some beings, what the heck would do it? I mean, it's nearly perfect in shape. I'm looking at one of your pages here in your book. You got the Pentagon, you got the DNM pyramid, you've got a graft of what a Pentagon looks like. It looks perfect. Am I wrong here?
No, you're accurate. That's why it's something really important about it, and hopefully more people can start looking at that critically because it does exist. In fact, enigmatically, the way that NASA's been handling the information that's been coming from Mars is making it so that people are becoming more intrigued. It's due in part because they're disseminating the information in this plausible deniability mode. When that happens, people think they're being, you know, pushed around. You know, they don't really actually think they're getting the full story, and so they start investigating, and it kind of backfires on them.
How old do you think this structure is?
It's 2 miles at the widest, 1.6 miles at its narrowest, and about 1,500 feet tall.
How old do you think it is?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to say that its antiquity stretches back to a place that humans didn't exist.
I know Vincent DiPietro believes that the face on Mars is probably about a billion years old.
Yeah. I don't know if it's actually that far back. I mean, it seems like there was a point in time where Mars was inhabitable. Mars had water on it. It was actually a thriving planet. And I think that the actual insertion of man into this, into the Earth, really doesn't extend much past a few hundred thousand years if we're going by what the ancient historians say.
There really don't seem to be a lot of structures on the planet scattered around the planet. They just seem to be within a certain region or two.
Because the actual prime meridian of Mars is located right in the Cydonia area.
That's true.
And that's a hugely significant point because that five-pointed star, at least in Egypt, was a symbol of Sirius. Ptolemy, the geographer, Claudius Ptolemy from Alexandria, was able to place the meridian in the northern hemisphere according to where Sirius was, because Sirius, the star, is the brightest star in the heavens. So he actually anchored the star in the northern hemisphere, in the celestial northern hemisphere, to the ground on the prime meridian.
Is it possible that Mars really wasn't inhabited like we are here on Earth, but merely occupants showed up, built the pyramids, other structures, and moved on?
That's a good possibility. Like I was saying, we can't always superimpose our human idea of building and civilization on what we see on Mars. We do know that there's a commonality between the structures and the symbols, but as far as the beings themselves, historically, they're always more, they're bigger than humans. They're more powerful. They're not even made of the same stuff. So that's a consistency throughout antiquity. So it's hard to try to superimpose human convention on them.
All right, let's go to the phones. Address either Stephen Quayle or David Flynn. And let's go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi there, George. This is Neil down here in San Diego.
Hello,
Neil. How's it going?
Great.
Loving your show. My question is for Steve Quayle.
Okay.
Also, Steve, I visited your website several times. It's wonderful. I was listening to Chuck Missler. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. I'm sure you have.
Yep, I do.
His standpoint, he was talking about the Nephilim, and the reason for the Great Flood was because Noah's family was the only pure human bloodline left. That was the reason for the flood, because the Nephilim had, all surrounding cultures, had impure bloodlines of the Nephilim. So I was wondering, what's your standpoint on that, of taking, instead of the engineering, you know, the genetic engineering that we were talking about earlier?
Well, yeah, let me share this, because I agree with Chuck on that point, because it states in the Old Testament, in Genesis, that Noah was perfect in his generations, and that means there was no corruption. What I'm stating is that the genetic engineering is a new opportunity for the fallen angels to bring about their desire, and that's the destruction of humanity and the replacement of beings that are no longer related to the creation of Adam. And I believe that the war, if you will, is that God's image as design and through creation of Adam and Eve, we are something that is obviously different than the fallen angels, and it brings about their contempt. And I think that the fascinating thing is that obviously we share something with God that even the angels don't share, and that's why there's this, if you will, supernatural animosity. But I agree with Chuck, and I believe that when we were talking earlier in the show about the bloodlines, George asked the question, well, who are these secret individuals, or this group as we would know them? They all trace themselves, by the way, through their bloodlines, and I believe that the Human Genome Project is looking for, if you will, anyone who has the relationship to the specific genetic markers of this rebellion so that they can exploit that. In other words, and I believe that's what will bring God's judgment and is very much a functional part of God's judgment in, quote, these end times.
Right. And do you also see to where in the Bible it does say at the end times, it doesn't use an article of a lie. It uses a definite article, the lie.
Absolutely. And I believe the lie is that the fallen angels alien consortium is saying that we shall be as gods. And that is the lie, not a lie.
Neil, thanks for that call. David, you have also done some work into end times. I've always asked experts this. I might as well ask you. Do you believe we're close to that?
Yeah, I do. In fact, part of the book goes into detail about the geometry of the Dedenne Pyramid and the symbol of the five-pointed star, how that relates to a celestial chronometer. And to make a long story short, the chronometer is at 12 o'clock right now. We're right exactly at the meeting point between aeons, a dividing point between one era, a paradigm of thought even, and the next one that's going to be completely different.
Okay, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Brian from South Bend,
Indiana. Welcome,
yep.
Brian.
I have a question for Dave.
Sure.
You guys have been talking earlier about geometry and also earlier about secret societies. And I was wondering, in your searches, in your research, if you had come across any connections between the Freemasons and sacred geometry. And I'll listen off the air.
Okay. Can you help him with that, David?
Yeah, they're intimately connected. See, what's interesting about most of the foundation myths that have to do with Mars is that at the same time people were learning civilization, and they were learning how to build weapons and metallurgy, they also were learning how to build structures. And you think about the first human being on this planet, at least according to the biblical text, who built a city. He was also the first murderer, and he was only the third person who was propagated, at least according to the creationism scenario. That was Cain. Cain built the first city for his son. And there's a lot of debate in the evangelical community about, okay, well, who populated the city? And what I think, and this fits into my theory of how there was an extraterrestrial presence on the earth before the flood, but they weren't actually interacting so much as they weren't actually breeding with humankind. They were actually teaching Cain how to build. They taught his ancestor Tubal-Cain how to make metal things, swords and that sort of thing, before the flood and before the Genesis 6 record of the Nephilim being propagated. So what we have is a continuation of this theme that connects Mars warfare and building as an extraterrestrial sort of influence. You don't read anywhere in the biblical text that God taught Cain how to build a city. He was in exile. But what's amazing is if you look at modern Freemasonry, they really hold in high esteem Tubal-Cain. They also, if they're going to consecrate, say, a stone for the foundation stone for a new building, they use grain, oil, and wine, which are all parts of agrarian farming products, and that's what Cain was. Cain was a farmer, and Abel was the shepherd. So in continuation with that theme, you see the Masons and building and Mars all connected.
David, if you had an opportunity to go back in the time, I assume you'd like to go back around this time period?
No. No, actually, it sounds like a real violent time to be alive.
Wouldn't you want to peek in on what was going on?
Yeah, I'd like to be able to hover above it.
Okay. Not get too involved.
No.
How about you, Stephen?
Well, obviously, I would want to go back to the time that I've spent 25 years of my life in, and that would be to see it and to see how the interplay and interaction between the giants. You know, the thing is, George, is these guys got wiped out. It was God's commandment to the children of Israel to wipe them all out. In that commandment carried the dispersion decree, and that's why you've got all of the all, I can't say this enough, civilizations of the world tracing their origin to giants, whether it's the Aztecs, Incas, Mayans, whether it is the people that built Angkor Wat in Cambodia, all of the temples, every place. It doesn't matter. You've got a super race of beings that have been scattered on the earth. And I guess if God's on your case and he's got a people that are ready to take him up on it and go out and get you, you're going to run. And so that's, I think, what's most interesting, because in mainstream archaeology, they tend to be isolationists. They tend to say that this group of people stayed within the geographical boundaries of their initial birth, and I just dispute that. It's absolutely unacceptable. Michael Cramo and others have done a fabulous job in forbidden archaeology, just showing, look at the way the technology spreads. So I think it's important that people recognize that, you know, the technology, the learning of warfare, whether it's swords, whether it was higher tech weaponry, as revealed in the Mahabharata and the Vimrayana, the Indian texts, I think the epics, I think it's really important to say, where did that technology come from? And I think that that's what David is covering and I'm covering and putting it together for your listeners.
Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hello, George. This is Patrick. I'm on the road.
Hi, Patrick.
I had a question for Stephen.
Sure.
There was some structures found off of Cuba, megalithic structures, and they also had particular angles. And the scientists that found it think it might be Atlantis. I wonder if you knew anything about this.
I have it on my website. And it was a husband and wife team that got permission from the Cubans, and everything that I've seen absolutely indicates point blank that there is a major underwater, major underwater plural structures, just like off of Yonguni in Okinawa. So I believe that absolutely they have found something, just like the Bimini Road Charles Berlitz wrote about initially. And I think that the best way to get up on all this stuff for all the listeners, George, is for them to read Graham Hancock's new book, Underworld.
Yes.
It is absolutely sensational. And again, Graham has done the best job of showing the sunken civilizations, and he deals with that, and he deals with the situation on Yonguni. Yonguni is an absolute underwater marvel. I believe, what is turned up in Cuba. And by the way, they're really monitoring those images. I'm being told that some of the great finds are being really withheld due to what we would call the enforcers of false history.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
mm-hmm.
really threatened by that. And again, I think it's important for people to recognize that whenever any of these massive and wonderful archaeological and historic finds are found, there's a real attempt to discredit them, because what it then does, it forces the issue for a lot of scientists and a lot of quote-unquote scholars in parentheses to have to say we were wrong.
I know Linda Moulton Howe had a report on that for us a few weeks ago, 2,200 feet down there, and that's a long, long way, and the structures, I believe, are indeed there. And I questioned Linda, Stephen, about why we haven't, as a nation, sent some of our own submarines that way, or the type of machinery we have in order to capture some great photographs. And I believe we probably already have, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I've talked to submarine captains. I've talked to people that will talk off record, and when they start to talk, the submariners, especially the guys that are on the boomers and stuff, when they start to talk about what they've seen and what they have to sign off, national security, denial sheets, the point is that we have it. We have everything. We've got some fabulous scans of everything that you and I and David are talking about, but they just won't let them loose. They won't free them up to the public.
Yeah, it is something else. And by the way, it's Paulina Zalitsky and her husband Paul Weinzig. They're the ones that, of course, stumbled into those structures off the coast of Cuba, and they'd like to go back. They're negotiating now. They might get funding from National Geographic to go back there, but still, like we all believe, I think someone else has already gone down there. I mean, these structures are just too important not to go down there, and we've got the capability and the equipment to do it.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, I believe National Geographic did fund them once and then pulled their funding when it appeared that pressure was put on them.
Okay, stick with us. We'll be back with David Flynn, Stephen Quayle, and your questions right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.